from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on Forum, in the mid-1980s, women made up 38% of the computer and IT workforce, but recent reports show that number has dropped to about 20%. Today, a growing number of organizations are teaching women and girls of all ages how to code, and we'll discuss why the gender gap is growing, and we'll examine efforts to reduce it. That's next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. There's been a widening gender gap in technology training. Young girls and young women are simply not being drawn, as boys and men are, to computer science, nor are they being as inspired to learn the learning code. And in this Forum Hour, we want to explore reasons behind the existing gap and discuss what is being done about it and what more can be done. And just to give you a little sense of what we're talking about statistically, about 20% of all programmers are women, and the number of those who major in computer science has actually gone down. According to 2010 National Center for Women in Information Technology report card, in 2009, women represented 57% of all undergraduates, yet earned only 18% of computer information and science degrees. In fact, the percentage of women in computer and mathematical professions declined to below 25% between 2000 and 2009. And during the academic year of 2008-2009, only 12% of full-time computer science faculty members at PhD-granting institutions were women. Let's just talk locally for a minute. At She++, which is a Stanford University-based community for women in technology, only 12% of undergraduate computer science majors were female, even though it's the university's most popular major. We thought maybe in the course of this hour we could find out why this decline and why this ongoing gender gap and what can be done about it. And actually, our three guests are all doing something about it. Let me introduce them to you. E.J. Jung is Assistant Professor of Computer Science at University of San Francisco. She also directs the USF program Computer Science for San Francisco Youth, which teaches middle school girls how to make apps and reassemble a computer. Welcome. Good morning.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us. Also glad to have Pamela Fox here, co-organizer of San Francisco chapter of Girls Develop It. They do a series of workshops to teach women about web development. Pamela Fox, good to have you. Welcome.
Thank you.
And also Kimberly Bryant is here with us. She's founder of Black Girls Code. And thank you for joining us in studio.
Thank you.
Glad to have you all aboard. As I said, it's nice to see some women geeks here. And congratulations on all of your achievements and all the work you're doing. Let's get to the heart of the matter, though. E.J. Jung, why this ongoing gender gap and why has it continued to increase just in the last couple of years?
I think there are actually two different reasons that people have been speculating about. One is definitely social and peer pressure at schools, how the girls are not very cool if they want to program, if they're interested in computer games, in especially middle school and high school level. Girls that are interested in computers are not very popular, and that social pressure definitely affects their major choices. And another reason, there's actually research about that too. When they surveyed women in, I believe, Carnegie Mellon and Harvey Mudd, they have found out that there's misconception about what computer science jobs are like. One of the main reasons they have cited is that, you know, it's a lonely job. It's just between you and computer. It doesn't actually have people element. I like to work with people, which is very untrue. As a computer scientist, and I have worked in industry, I would say 60% of my time I was talking to people. So the misconception definitely plays a role.
So misconceptions, social barriers, stereotyping, all of those things. But what can be done about it? And we'll get right to that. You've actually focused on middle school. And it was a switch for you, right?
It was a switch for me. We started high school 9 years ago, and I made a switch 2-3 years ago to middle school audience because the survey results from my own camp and also the educational research suggested that the time that girls make the decision what major they want to choose come in early years of high school. So we wanted to reach before they make the decision and influence their decision.
Wouldn't it be better to even begin earlier than that, like, I don't know, pre-kindergarten or something?
That actually is still debatable. There's not a concrete research in education and especially child development whether it's better to have social development with real human beings versus having this more intellectual and also emotional and sensory stimulants that could be overloading through computers and other electronic devices.
Again, E.J. Jung is Assistant Professor of Computer Science at USF, and Kimberly Bryant's here in studio with us. She's founder of Black Girls Code. If this is a problem across the board for young women, it's even more of a problem for young women of color, isn't it?
Absolutely. So my journey to becoming a geek started really 20 plus years ago when I decided to go to school for electrical engineering. And at that time, I was just lucky that it was about 35% of women that were going into STEM careers at that time in the mid 80s. And it's plummeted since that period to like a dismal 3% or less for African-American women and less than 1% for Latinas. So there's two things at play when we look at women of color, both the gender as well as the racial barriers to getting into the field.
And for those who are doing something, a lot of the opportunities are going to, some women of color, but often Asian and often affluent.
Affluent, most definitely. I ran into this problem myself as a mother of a 12-year-old at the time when I started BGC and looking for opportunities for her to participate in computer training and computer camps, and found fabulous programs and things at Harvard and UC Berkeley during the summer, but extremely expensive ones. So that was one of my main motivating factors for finding an opportunity to create BGC and Black Girls Code to give opportunities across the socioeconomic range of adults and parents so that they could really access these type of programs.
But often those who can't access these type of programs or who don't have the kind of money that we're talking about don't even have the money to buy computers.
Absolutely. So even though we've done a lot to provide training in our classes and our courses that the kids attend after school, I would say over half of our students don't have laptops and computer equipment at home. So there is still a very real barrier that we're working against.
And the vast majority of girls are simply not getting the training, though. They're not getting tech education. They're not getting learning code. And the fact of the matter is that a lot of this has to do just with, even though there may be more responsiveness, more sensitivity with our infrastructure, our educational infrastructure.
Absolutely. One of the things that I've been struggling with over the last 2 years is that we can only do so much in an after-school setting. We really need to now do a policy push on K through 12 education and really push that both STEM education and particularly computer training is available. And I don't mean learning to do a spreadsheet. I mean actual coding classes are available to all of our K through 12 youth.
So you're reaching out particularly to young girls who are African-American, Latina, and Native American, and your age group is largely focused on 7 to 17?
Yes, 7 to 17. So we found very early as well in our research that, and still to this day, our biggest block is middle school girls that attend our workshops. But for women of color, we find that if we could start earlier, that's even better because it really starts to create an interest and plant that seed as young as in pipeline, as early in the pipeline as possible. Because by high school, it's almost impossible for us to recruit girls of color into computer programming. And middle school is just where their minds are fertile and we can shape them. But if we can interest them even earlier, that really brings them strong support into getting them in the field.
Kimberly Bryant, again, is the founder of Black Girls Code, and Pamela Fox is co-organizer of the San Francisco chapter of Girls Develop It. They have workshops on web development. You're working with more the age range 20, 25.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So I've been working with Girl Develop It for the last year and a half here in San Francisco, and we've been targeting the adults. And sometimes they do bring their daughters along, like mother-daughter pairs, but it's been mostly them. But then a month ago, I started working at Khan Academy on the computer programming curriculum. So there, I'm starting to get more into the audience that we've been talking about for the last few minutes, the middle school audience, because that's really our target audience, right, is really like middle school audience. We've been trying to come up with curriculum that really appeals to all, genders, races, everything. So, and showing all the different sides of programming, right? And showing that you can use programming to make, you can make robots and games and You can cure diseases and you can visualize history, and there's so many amazing things you can do with programming. So now I'm kind of shifting balance to looking at that middle school crowd as well, because I think we've all figured out that that's where we need to get them, right?
But how do you get them? I mean, the fact of the matter is there's a lot of what we've described as social barriers here and stereotyping and all that sort of thing. Girls feeling somehow, you know, that they shouldn't be doing computers. It even branches out into the whole STEM field. I mean, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And the fact of the matter is that a lot of girls just feel, well, you know, this is not for me. This is not what I should be studying. I'm a girl.
There's definitely a lot of people who think that, but then so one of the things is providing a comfortable firm environment for them and a social environment for them. So I think all of the workshops we have are very social, and you're around people, and you come away from those workshops actually feeling like you just had this amazing experience where you both learned something and where you got to know someone, right? So for Girl Develop It, we have these pair-up events where you get paired up with a random other person, a woman of the same level. You spend 2 hours trying to solve a problem with them, and you come away having a new friend and newfound knowledge that you, like, write on our knowledge wall. So I think that's really, really cool, is having both a social and an education experience at the same time.
You had an advantage. Both your parents in computer science, right?
Yeah, I did.
In fact, I think, as I understand it, your father held your allowance unless you got busy with programming. Is that
yeah,
right?
Well, I learned how to lie early, obviously. Yeah.
Thank you for that idea.
Does that help you as a computer programmer?
Lie.
But your age range goes really across the spectrum pretty much, doesn't it? Those you work with. It gets harder to work with people as they get older, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, we've definitely found that when people – for the Girl Development workshops, when people come in that, you know, they're like 50 and they haven't touched computers in a long time, and it's something they just recently decided they want to get into, they're very hesitant around the computer. So that's why the very first exercise you'll ever do, your very first web page that you make, it's – purposely a really basic exercise, because the point isn't to suddenly know how to program. The point is, like, just feel comfortable with the computer. Feel like you can, you know, attack that computer and it's
attack
totally
it.
Okay.
The computer is your friend, I thought.
Well, like, at the keyboard, I'll see people who haven't been around computers a lot, they're very hesitant with the keyboard. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, just mash it. Just, you know, just mash that keyboard, right? So, we go very... very slow with the first exercise. The point of a first exercise for somebody learning to program isn't for them to suddenly know how to program. It's for them to feel comfortable, right? Because if they don't feel comfortable in that first 10 minutes, then they're not going to feel comfortable the rest of the day, right?
And again, Pamela Fox here in studio is co-organizer of the San Francisco chapter of Girls Develop It. They offer a series of workshops to teach women about web development. Go back, if I may, E.J. Jung, to you. Well, there are studies that show, I mean, that women often do better in these kind of jobs, better for their clients, better for their employers. There's also some studies that show that women succeed, certainly, when they do go into computer science fields or when they do go into STEM fields. I guess some of this is just education to the masses. I mean, kind of a marketing and selling job to people to convince them that this is a reality that women can do and do.
I think that there's definitely truth in that. I have been talking to parents a lot, trying to show them how the computer science-related jobs are really good for their children. Because I think parents, when they see smart daughters, they sometimes want to influence them to go to, say, business major or maybe medical or pharmacy. And parents are, I think, naturally pushing their girls towards something they think it's beneficial, you know, long-term career and financially stable. And I try to approach the parents and say, look, computer science jobs are going to be the most growing jobs in the next 10 years. And I actually, as a mother, I feel that computer science jobs are great because I can take my laptop, go home, put my child to bed, and then work after that. So very flexible job environment, usually better paying jobs than compared to other jobs that you can get just by graduating from college. So I definitely try to educate parents more, and I hope that parents will realize. And I actually heard from friends from India that how parents have changed their minds about girls having science and engineering jobs, and it has changed the gender ratio there dramatically.
Didn't you also early on kind of fall in love with computer programming because it gave you some social connectedness? And I mean, as opposed to this image of being alone in a room and not being socially
Absolutely. So one of the exercises that I encourage girls to do is to show them how they're actually using their creativity to show to other girls what they can do, and even other boys in the class maybe. Mm-hmm. So we definitely create games and phone apps and these things. So I try to show them what they can reach. It's actually not between themselves and computers, but people behind the internet, which could be millions at a time. So once they make a phone app, they often ask me, oh, can I put this on the market so that kids can download it and play with me? So I definitely emphasize the social aspect of it.
And Kimberly Bryant, let me talk with you about a couple of concepts that I became educated about just recently. One is the unicorn effect, which is real, certainly. We're not talking about the old Celtic myths about the unicorn being, you know, tied to virginity. I want to get your take on that. And what they call pinkifying.
So in the black tech community, we like to kind of joke about the unicorn effect. And that is, you know, being the one and only, you know, something that you is very rare. So if you find a black programmer, you know, we become the unicorn, so to speak, because it's something that you don't see often. And that's something that I think is very important to fight against by diversifying the industry as much as possible. To Pamela's point, one of the things that we try to build in our organization is really this confidence and this level of confidence and skills and abilities with the girls so that they can go back out into the broader community and create this change in the diversity that we're trying to see. So it won't be the unicorn effect when you run across a black programmer. But on a daily basis, I get emails from folks across the racial spectrums on, yes, I've never worked with a black programmer and I've been a programmer for 20 plus years. And that's something that needs to change because, as EJ said, this is going to be the fastest growing occupation in the next 20 plus years. So we need to be able to reach across all a really broad expanse of individuals to get them involved in the industry. And the pinkifying is just a personal pet peeve of mine because I grew up in engineering. And I don't believe that necessarily things need to be pink and girlified, as if that's a word, a new word, to encourage girls to get interested. So EJ's shaking her head.
Pink phones and pink apps. And yes. I mean, there's a whole world of pink Barbies and stuff out there. But what about all that, you know, that, you know, girls are more interested in fashion and gossip and dieting. That's all kind of a different sort of pinkifying, isn't it?
It is. And I think that is true in some cases, but it's anecdotal. Not all girls are interested in fashion. Not all girls are interested in diet tips. Girls' interests, just as boys, run the gamut. So you need to be able to reach the girl that's interested in fashion as well as reach the girl that's interested in World of Warcraft.
I can't wait to see a cover of Cosmo or Vogue saying, you know, new research in STEM or new ways to find a computer science career. But,
yes,
you know, realistically, of course, you're up against a whole mass popular culture here.
There are some things that they found that everyone's attracted to, right? So there's been a lot of research in, so there's great things. Alice is a programming language that they created for kids, Scratch. So Alice was an environment where you could both create stories and games. Mm-hmm. And that was an environment that turned out was really good for all genders because everybody really likes creating stories and then also maybe turning them into games, right? And some people are more inclined towards stories, some people more inclined towards games. But having an environment that allows you to go either way there managed to get them a wide spectrum of all the interests, right?
Have there been studies, though, that show that boys and girls are different? They have different tastes as far as games, that boys like robotics more, that to some extent they like more aggressive games and so forth?
I think in some cases that is true. But again, you know, it depends. I always answer that question, well, it depends. I was the mom that had the daughter that was heavily into World of Warcraft, and I had no idea what that was she was doing. Or, you know, or Halo. Any of those aggressive games that girls are not supposed to like, that's what she liked. So it really depends. But in our classes, we do see girls tend to, as Pamela say, they tend to gravitate, in many cases, more towards stories and a different type of games. But they're still avid gamers. So it's just about creating opportunities for individuals to go where their interests lie.
Well, your interest may lie in the whole topic that we're talking about here about women in the workforce and women in the IT workforce specifically and why their numbers are not larger, and also the education of young women, young girls particularly, and the ways to get them more interested in the worlds of technology and the STEM world, really also talking about science, technology, engineering, and math in general. If you'd like to join the conversation, we welcome your involvement, and you can participate by calling our toll-free number right now. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your call, so feel free to join the program. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786. Maybe you might want to highlight some of your own experiences as a parent or, for that matter, as a young person in terms of just the gender gap that we're talking about here, and suggest some ideas of how to reduce it and what to do about it. You can also, of course, join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or tweeting us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, and you can also go to our Facebook page. We're talking with Kimberly Bryant, who is founder of Black Girls Code, with Pamela Fox, co-organizer of the San Francisco chapter Girls Develop It, and E.J. Jung, who is assistant professor of computer science at University of San Francisco. How many professors of computer science are there now, roughly? Do we know?
In USF or in general?
In general.
In general. So we call it leaky pipe. We started about 20% in assistant level. And as you go to full professor, I believe it actually drops below 10.
That in itself, of course, is very revelatory. I want to mention one more thing before we bring our listeners into this. There was an apology written, we had mentioned this on our website, to all of the readers of TechCrunch Disrupt and the attendees of their 2013 conference for allowing a couple of inappropriate presentations on stage. This was earlier today. TechCrunch Disrupt is a notable technology conference that draws a lot of speakers like Mark Zuckerberg and startup judges like Marissa Mayer. And two of the presentations took the audience by surprise. One was called, and I'm not sure the advisability of language here, so I'll use the word that I often use to talk about women's chests, mammary stare, except it was a three-letter word rather than mammary, as you can well imagine. Not a good word for public radio. And in fact, some of this concern was borne out by the fact that some young girl, like a 9-year-old girl, was upset about this and exposed to this. It was an app that two hackers called Titillating, and the breast app ever, and the founders were Australian, but they presented this as a joke. Their app shows pictures of people looking at cleavage. This is the kind of thing we should be concerned about? What do you...
I was actually in attendance at the TechCrunch Disrupt Hackathon this weekend with a team of three girl coders from Black Girls Code. Mm-hmm. And we got there at 12 on Saturday, and they spent the night. They stayed the whole night hacking. I went home on Sunday morning for a rest. So I'm intimately familiar with the happenings. And this, unfortunately, was the occurrence that happened during the presentations on Sunday. And the presenters did... I think the unfortunate part is that it was not just the presenters of this inappropriate and misogynist app, but the response of the crowd was actually celebratory, and it actually encouraged
the old boys' club fraternity stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's really the feeling that I had sort of during the weekend, that, oh, this is college revisited 2013, and I'm glad I'm not there.
We did a lot of programs on Silicon Valley, and the sense is that often in many of the companies down there, it is like an old boys' club, and it's very much celebratory of just the sorts of things that we're talking about here. So we bring that into the conversation as well, and we'll bring you in when we return. You're listening to Forum. We're talking again with Kimberly Bryant, Pamela Fox, and E.J. Jung about, well, gender gap, which is increasing rather than decreasing. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking about how to inspire girls and women to code. And the reason behind wanting to inspire girls and women to code is in the mid-1980s, women made up 38% of the computer and IT workforce. But recent reports show That number has actually dropped to 20%. So today, a growing number of organizations are teaching women and girls of all ages how to code. And we're discussing why the gender gap is growing and examining efforts to reduce it with E.J. Jung, who is assistant professor of computer science at University of San Francisco and also the director of the USF program Computer Science for San Francisco Youth, which teaches middle school girls how to make apps and reassemble a computer. Pamela Fox, also with us in studio, is the co-organizer of San Francisco chapter of, by the way, we should say this the right way, Girl Develop It, rather than Girls Develop It. They offer a series of workshops that teach women about web development. And Kimberly Bryant is with us as well, and she's founder of Black Girls Code. And we'll go right to your calls. Let me begin, Eva, with you. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Thank you. So I wanted to respond to the discussion about pinkifying to make things more interesting to girls. I have two young girls, 5 and 7. And I saw this with Legos. Like, they were very interested in building and design when they were little, but there weren't a lot of the Legos were really oriented toward, you know, building a destroyer or, you know, trucks, and they just weren't as interested in that. And more recently, Legos kind of increased the availability of things like they have a treehouse, they have a beauty shop. I don't have super girly girls, but they like role-playing. They're interested in social dynamics. And the Lego line even has these, like, little figurines that you can, you know, build them a house, and then they can play in it, and they really responded to it. So I think that it is important that girls tend to be excited and drawn in by things that maybe are a little different from boys, and, you know, to think about how technology can tap into their interest in those kind of social dynamics and doing things together and role-playing.
Well, Kimberly Bryant, I asked you initially about pinkifying. Want to respond to the caller?
No, I think she's spot on. What we find often is that girls are interested in role-playing, even in their gameplay. They build role-playing games a lot. So when I say that, you know, there's a way to do make things more accessible and interesting to girls, and there's a way to kind of go take it overboard. So I think there's definitely some really hard and fast research on what makes it interesting to girls, and I agree.
And I thank Eva for the call, and let me go to another caller. That's Emmanuel in Sunnyvale. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, good morning. My name is Emmanuel. I'm a program director of an organization called Bootstrap. Kimberly and I are, we've met each other a couple of times. Kimberly, I just wanted to say hello.
Hi.
So I just wanted to add something to the conversation here. I know, you know, it's fantastic that we're focusing on engagement and inspiring, especially young women, especially women of color. But something that often gets lost in the focus on engagement is the role of high-stakes testing and also college prerequisites for computer science. So, for example, you know, if a student failed Algebra 1, in many states that prevents them from even graduating high school, let alone going on to college, let alone majoring in computer science. And I just wanted to make sure for any listeners, parents, principals, teachers, school administrators might be part of the conversation here, that it's important to look at not only engaging girls in computer science, but also making sure that we're emphasizing the importance of you know, just simple math, in particular algebra, if we want students to have access to those skills.
Yeah, an excellent point, Emmanuel. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. And some points coming in by email that I want to go to here as well. Red from Oakland writes, one problem, young women interested in computer science must possess a high tolerance for work relationships with socially awkward young men. I just want to put that out there. And Pat writes, I ran a computer camp for a number of years in the Seattle area, mainly for later grade schoolers and middle schoolers. And when we talk about introduction of girls, though, I was struck by the elbowing out that boys demonstrated at even the first and second grade level when I would take PCs into the classroom of my daughter. Teachers never corrected the situation. Your guest talking about the sense of isolation is really big. My daughter gave up on computer science at UCSD. At UCSD, due to continued elbowing out, particularly from the professors. Mm. We talk about that kind of elbowing or whatever, male hegemony?
I think that's
Pamela
why. It's because I went to college for computer science, and I think I had some female colleagues, but I don't remember. and that's why you do see things like Society for Women Engineers and at Stanford, the C++, like there's a whole organization specifically for getting more women in Stanford computer science and being very supportive of it. So that's why you see these organizations come up, because it's, you know, it's knowing that you have a community of people that are supporting you there and that you can, you know, study with and hang out with and do your programs with. So what I've realized in doing, you know, Girl Develop It over the last year is that it's not just that we're teaching. Like, yeah, we're teaching and we're pretty good teachers, but what we're really doing is we're creating a community of people, because we'll go and do the workshops and then afterwards I'll see that these people are now tweeting each other and they're like arranging to get together and they're finding co-founders. So it's as much about education as it is about the community that you create.
I'd like to add one thing to that. So,
CJ Jung.
The elbowing out, I think, is also coming from the fact that boys get exposed to computer science early on. Mm-hmm. So by the time they get to college, some of them have programmed already. And then they are willing to show off, very willing to show off.
Yes.
And often intimidating other girls in the same class. And that actually creates kind of, hostile environment for girls, thinking that, oh, everybody else, especially guys, can do these things already. Maybe I'm starting too slow. All the girls out there, I can tell you for sure, it's not too late, and they're just showing off. They do not actually know that much more than you do.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, boys generally think they know more than they.
Right.
They
do. So our efforts to reach out to middle school girls, I'm hoping that'll correct that mm-hmm. kind of small gap that starts as small but then becomes more bigger problem elbowing out
right.
later.
And I think yeah. some colleges are also doing like pre-freshman programs, especially mm-hmm. for computer science, where you're more likely to be intimidated and drop out. So I think those pre-freshman year programs could be really powerful too.
I want to bring another caller in here, and that's Angelina. Good morning.
Good morning. I was calling in because I was that unicorn at UC Davis for quite a while. And left there being that also. I was involved in MERPS and MESA before going there, so I kind of already knew that there isn't going to be a lot of black females there. But when I went to Cisco Systems, the same thing happened there. And so I left because I felt very isolated, didn't really have a mentor to go to combat some of the things that were coming up. And so since then, you know, I've worked in something else, but I'm wanting to re-enter. And so I'm wondering about if the same thing is going to happen, what's going to happen when I'm faced in front of someone at an interview and they're asking, or they're just amazed that, hopefully amazed, that I'm actually a software developer and black and female.
We don't know what's going to happen to you in the future, but can you give her some wisdom, Kimberly Bryant?
I would encourage her, and I often do encourage women that are later in their career or want to reenter and were in computer science or engineering and dropped off to get back on the train. I think it's important that we are there. I think it's important not just
on the caboose, though. Right?
Not on the caboose, but get at the front of the train. We have some fantastic role models that are doing that, such as Ursula Burns, Sheryl Sandberg, Marissa Meyer. But we need women throughout the whole pipeline, middle management, entry level, as well to mentor back for young women today. And then find those allies. I think one of the things that's increasingly important, as Pamela keeps mentioning, is having a community of support and allies.
Any specific reentry tips, though, in terms of going back into the workplace?
I definitely, again, say organizations such as Girl Develop It, RailsBridge, Women Who Code, these are type of organizations. Rails Girls, and it's for women, but it's called Rails Girls, are organizations that are affinity groups for women in the technology space that can create some avenues of support, both for getting your skills back up to mm-hmm. speed, as well as guest mentorship and advocacy for you.
Judy, can we get these up on our website? For people who want to get a hold of them, we'll try to do that for those of you, our listeners. A listener writes, it's now more necessary to have a computer science degree than it once was, and social pressure in secondary school and at university makes it less likely that women will get that degree. If twice as many women get computer science degrees than before, but it's three times harder to get a coding job without one, that could mean little progress. Anybody want to comment on that? Well, let me go to another comment. Linda writes, when I became a programmer in the 80s, there were no computer science degrees. Requirements were a degree in something, anything, a logical mind, good analytical skills. After that, the nuts and bolts of programming were not that hard to teach us. One of the most brilliant hotshot programmers I ever knew had a master's degree in art history. Bank of America had an intensive analyst training class for about 6 weeks, as I recall. I had many, many women colleagues. I had women managers. The basic logical structures of programming have not changed that much. it is what it is. Yet no one would dream of hiring me or someone like me nowadays. They've surrounded the field with this mystique that it is so difficult that you have to be a math whiz and on and on. And Mary writes, as a proud mom of a daughter who is in her last year of a doctoral program in biostatistics, double majored in biology and computer science as an undergrad, I have a great concern about the barriers to women who are not privileged. Our daughter had access to a Sesame Street keyboard and the earliest Apple computers when she was two and took off from there. I think access to the early expensive hardware was crucial in helping her discover her interest in coding. And there again, we get into, well, frankly, class differences or money differences. Becky from Livermore writes, what do you think of University of California refusing to expand engineering programs to accommodate more students? They claim it would dilute the quality of their programs, but there are an excess of qualified students who won't get into the program. Can I hear from you on this, Professor Jung?
I actually am not in a UC system. So
that's okay. But maybe the outsider status gives you even more authority to comment on it.
I understand that UC engineering system is very competitive, and the particular moment, I think, could be more coming from the budget restriction than anything else.
I would agree. Another listener says, girls and boys are given conflicting messages by people who say, follow your heart, your passion, et cetera, and others who say, study math and science to get a job. All right. Let me bring another caller on here, and that's Nathan. You're on.
Hi. I've got 3 points. And I've been in computers for 30-some years. And I was a member of a Society for Women in Engineering when I was in school. The first I'd like to shout out to the ADA initiative. That's ADA. It is headed up by Valerie Arora. And it's particularly concerned with getting girls involved and women involved with free software programming, which is pretty important because when I hire at my employer, involvement in free software projects is an excellent way to demonstrate skills, much better than chatting up in an interview. The second point is that programming, in my experience, really is a mostly solitary activity. And there are roles that involve more social activity, but mostly it's sitting quietly and working in front of the computer. But girls are being socialized to be social, but not everybody is naturally inclined that way. And it's an opportunity to have something that doesn't involve a lot of social interaction. And the third point is that
you're doing a number like Rick Warren here, the governor of Texas. Did you forget your third point?
Yeah, the third point is that more than half of I wasn't sure anybody was still on the line.
Oh, we're here.
The third point is that more than half of people with that STEM training are not employed in their field. There's way more. Say people studying and graduating in these fields than there are jobs to do in it, and that's partly in due to these H-1B programs where they convince legislators that there's a big shortage. Now, in fact, when we get applications for software engineers, most of the people who are supposed to be qualified turn out not to be. So that's just being, I mean, yes, there's a great deal of competition, but just being competent makes an enormous difference in whether you can get a job in this field.
Well, Nathan, you raised some important points. I thank you for those. In fact, let's get some comment on the points he's just made, particularly the last one about H-1B visas and the difficulty in getting jobs. Some thoughts, Professor Jung?
So I actually am aware of that stats that more than half of the people who graduate with a STEM degree do not actually get a job in STEM degree. And it's not broken down enough that I could not actually tell how much of that is true in computer science. If you actually believe other stats, there are actually stats that say one out of three jobs that we're going to create in computer engineering and computer science, it's not going to be filled by U.S.-born people. I mean, Code.org has made a great point by issuing this video about it. So I am aware of that stats. I'm not exactly sure how much of that is true in computer science. And at the same time, I wonder if this is because the work environment was not as fostering as it could be. Especially, I hear from a lot of women going to science and engineering jobs, not necessarily computer science, who require long work hours and eventually decide it is not worth for me to be away from family this much. So I'm not entirely sure how much of that is from the work environment factors or what exactly discipline applies, how much of that.
I want to go to more callers and get more of our callers involved here, but I may have to throw a little bit of a monkey wrench in here. I was just thinking about the fact that the late Ted Rozak, who is not an infrequent guest on this program, author of many books, including most notably The Making of the Counterculture, used to say that computers take away from creativity in young people. And he made the argument quite vehemently, in fact, that computers are somehow antithetical to creativity and to allowing students to foster. Now, I know all of you would probably view this as a heretical point of view, but nevertheless, he took it and was very solidly a believer of that. And then some say when we talk about social things that computers have a tendency to take you away from. You've all been saying the opposite, but you know, you do work alone, like Nathan said in that call. And not only work alone, but you're doing things virtually, maybe socially, but not necessarily in connection with real people of plasma and protoplasm. These are big arguments that one hears, but they're also arguments that fit into the whole paradigm of what we're talking about, which keeps a lot of girls, I think, out of computers.
Right. I mean, I think programming and computing is such a spectrum that I think all these things are true. So I think that computing can be huge for creativity. The reason that I love computing is that all you need is a computer and your head, and you can sit there and in 2 hours you could come up with something that nobody else had ever thought of. You could then post it on the internet. You could have 25,000 people use that app within 3 hours, right? And this is without having, you don't have to go and get arts and crafts, and you don't have to figure out some way of sharing it. So the ability for you to come up with something from nothing and to share it with the whole world, that's something that we now have via computers. And so that's why I kind of fell in love with it, because I'm like, wow, I can make these apps and share them with people, and I can reach across the whole internet, and I mean, my first boyfriends were cyber boyfriends, right? this boy from Iowa, I understand his username, not his name, but
this was not a catfish type thing, I hope.
So you can use computing for creativity, and you can also use programming and computing to be social, or you could use it to not be social, right? Like you have all those options. You can use it, because I lived in, like, in the boonies, so I wasn't able to go over to people's houses after school because they were just way too far and there was a prison in the way. But I could go and make my, like, online, I had a cyber club, of course. So I could go and log into my cyber club and see what poems people had written that day, and then go chat and start a little cyber war. And, you know, I could have this bit of socialness that I wasn't able to have otherwise.
And get your allowance, right?
Yeah.
Let me get some more calls in here, and we'll go next to Karen in St. Helena. Hi.
Hi,
Helena, excuse me. Yeah. Hi, Karen. Join us, please.
Hi. I wanted to comment on the view that we need to start early with girls, and that this program is beginning at middle school. And I just want to say that when I was in grade school, fifth grade, 1970, I remember distinctly had a male teacher, and I observed at 10 years old that the boys got more attention when it came to math and science. And I started to think that it was for boys, and I had wanted to be a surgeon, but I thought, well, I'd better be a nurse. And then totally got intimidated by math and science and focused on the humanities. At 40, I did go into nursing, but have always had an interest in web design, but thought, oh, I'm not computer-minded. My Washington pre-college testing indicated that I would excel at mechanical engineering. I thought it was a mistake. My son-in-law is a mechanical engineer, and he has spoken at length with me about this. Says, I think you would have done great in engineering and computers, and he's concerned about his little baby daughter. So this has been a lifelong observation for me, and I, you know, just, it started so early for me, and I don't think it's really gotten any better.
Well, I'm glad you shared your sentiments as well as your experience, and we're hoping it does get better. Karen, thank you. I want to get another Karen on here from San Francisco. Karen the second. Hi.
Yes, hi. I'm a woman coder. I'm in my 30s, and I have been in coding for 12 years. So I just want to give my perspective. It kind of echoes on what you touched on earlier. I mean, I went to engineering after high school because I was competitive with all the boys in my math and science class. And in my 20s, I really enjoyed the intellectual challenge. I think coding is very empowering. I'm very proud of all the applications I've written. Now that I'm in my 30s, I don't want to do coding forever. I don't want to work with computer all the time. I feel like I want to exercise other parts of my brain, like, for example, working with people. And also, now that I'm married and I have a child, it's hard for me to work in a startup where you have to work hard and play hard, because I just need a balance in my life now. So
what about what Kimberly said before, that it's easier as a mother in some ways? It gives you more flexibility. That was said by Professor Jung.
I missed that.
No, she had said earlier, one of our guests had said that it gives her more flexibility as a mother to work in computer science.
Being a coder, you just need a computer to program, and you can program anywhere. I think that does provide flexibility. But if you work for a startup, they still would require you to work all the time.
Yeah. Well, startups are different. I'm glad we made that distinction, and I thank you for the call. And I just want to remind you, our listeners, that you're listening to Forum. We're talking with E.J. Jung and Pamela Fox and Kimberly Bryant, and this is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. So for more information about how to support KQED, simply go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. Trisha from San Francisco writes, one of the most important things is to make accessible and engaging curriculum. More is not better if it is incomprehensible and overwhelming. We should present math and science and code so all students can get curious and excited, not just the ones who have minds that can wrap their head around traditional math and science curriculum. And Pamela Fox, when you work with even in their 20s, young women, really necessitates going a lot slower, doesn't it? Methodically,
yeah,
slower.
We slow it down more and more every time we do a workshop. We're like, well, let's do it even slower, right? Because you don't want to make people feel like they're being rushed. So because of that, I'm starting to contemplate doing the flipped classroom approach. I don't know if you've heard about that, but that's basically the idea that it's about letting students learn at their own pace, and about the classroom being about the hands-on. So basically, like, you could have the students watch the videos themselves, maybe with headphones or watching on their laptop. Then they do the exercise. During the exercise, that's where the teachers come in. The teachers are really the facilitators, the people walking around during the exercises, helping them through the exercise, right? But all the curriculum is pre-recorded so that they can just watch it when they need to, if they need to, right? If they're very fast, if they already know something, they don't need to rewatch it, right? So this flipped classroom approach, like, that's the idea. That's the idea behind, like, Khan Academy. It's that you have these pre-recorded lectures and people going at their own pace. So that way it's kind of the ultimate where you can figure out how fast you need to learn, right? And you can go deep into something if you need to. So I think that I might start trying that out in our workshops.
And I think we have Jez on the line here. Jez, join us. Hi.
Hi. I work for ThoughtWorks, which helps black girls code with some of their workshops. And I speak at conferences a lot, and I got really sick of seeing a bunch of other white dudes at conferences. And so when I came to help organize ThoughtWorks conference, FlowCon, we actually ended up getting 43% female speakers. And the way we did that was, firstly, we got half the program committee being women, and then half the speakers were invited, and we made sure that we actually sought out some of the really excellent speakers, female speakers on tech to invite and encourage them to join. And then when we put out a call for proposals, we made sure that the call for proposals was anonymous, that when you submitted, you just submitted your abstract and title, and we judged purely on that. And by doing that, we actually were able to get 43% female speakers. So I guess what I'd say is, you know, it can be done, and it wasn't that hard. You just had to put a bit of extra effort into it. And I guess I'd encourage people to, you know, try and get people to run conferences where they actually get people to join in this way.
Well, congratulations on what you did, and thank you for the call. I want to get another caller in here, and that's Elizabeth. Elizabeth, good morning. You're on the air.
Morning. Thank you so much for this discussion. I'm a woman in computer science. I'm a software engineer at Google, and I just wanted to talk about the importance of having role models and visible women in technology. I did some research at Carnegie Mellon with Carol Fries on surveying undergraduate students at Carnegie Mellon, and one of the things that we found was that especially for the women in the computer science major, many of them had parents in the STEM field. So just having somebody to look up to and encourage you in that. And I found that personally as well. Both of my parents are in computer science, and my grandfather was in engineering. So just role models are very, very important. And I'd love to hear your guest comments on that.
Can't emphasize that enough. We've got three of them right here with us in studio this morning. Want to say anything, any of you, about role modeling?
I think I'm the only one that had non-STEM parents.
I had non-STEM parents. My parents were non-STEM.
Yeah, my father was in stock exchange, and my mother was a housewife. And my entire family and relatives, I'm the only single science and engineering person. Mm-hmm. And I think the role models doesn't have to come from family, and that's what we are offering all these different opportunities. And one of the things I also want to mention is that City of San Francisco is putting computer labs and iPads into middle school in San Francisco right now. And I'm very much hoping that the teachers in these schools can get educated, and I already offered my help to train these teachers. And hopefully the teachers will be role models for these people too.
I think
Kimberly Bryant.
Yeah, I agree with EJ. My mother went and got her college degree after I myself and my siblings received ours. So my role model was my brother, who was an engineer before I was. And I think for our programs, we really focus on bringing in women that can role model by teaching our classes and mentoring our girls as TAs in the classes. As EJ said, it doesn't necessarily have to be a family member. And in communities of color, that's often not something that we're going to find. There's no engineers in the community, or likely not a parent that is an engineering degree. So bringing in women to mentor the girls is very important.
Well, congratulations to all of you for the work that you're doing. And thank you for joining us this morning on Forum. And I should mention my apologies to all those who sent us comments that we didn't get on the air here. But you can continue this discussion simply by going online, kqed.org/forum, and clicking on this segment. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening. I want to thank our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, our engagement producer, Amanda Stupai. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. For all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.